It's a much better book than I think what I gave it credit for. Yes, there are a couple of senses. I'll turn to the book of Numbers. Now, last week, I said, hey, you know, we always just kind of skim through Numbers. We don't ever read Numbers. We're going to Numbers today because it's a much better book than I think what I gave it credit for. Yes, there are a couple of censuses in there, and those get a little bit laborsome, but it is a wonderful book that teaches about trust in God. So Numbers 11, and we're going to refer to that in a minute, but let me ask you a couple of questions first. Have you ever wanted something so bad? Is that bad or badly? You ever wanted something so badly that you would have done almost anything to get it? And then later, when it didn't happen, you were very happy that it didn't take place. Has that ever happened to you? You wanted something so desperately, you'd done just almost anything. It didn't happen. But then later you look back and you go, whew, good thing. Good thing. Second question. Have you ever found that the anticipation and the desire to have something far outweighs how it feels when you actually get it? You ever felt that way? I mean, you couldn't wait for something. And all of a sudden, probably in relationships we do that, don't we? You think back to when you were dating. Man, this is a guy, this is a girl that I'd give anything to be with her. And then you get to be with them and you're going, they're terrible. This isn't anything of what I thought it was going to be. Do not look at your husband. Do not look at your wife right now. Of course not. We do. But you know, we anticipate things and we're so excited about something happening. And yet when it actually comes and we're going, what was I all worked up about? But one of my main questions this morning is this. How do we deal with the natural desire that we each have to obtain and to gather and to make things better than what they are? That's a natural way to be. And what I've entitled this morning is, be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for. Because you know the rest of that sentence is what? You may get it. You actually may get it. And that's the story in Numbers 11 that we're going to be looking at this morning. This is a great story. The book of Numbers is a continuation, a historical continuation of Exodus. When you read the book of Exodus, of course, that's where, and you're all thinking of Charlton Heston, that's fine. But Exodus, Moses leads all the children of Israel out of Egypt after they'd been in bondage all of that time. And they come into the desert because that's where Egypt led them. Of course, you left there, you're going into the Sinai desert. And so they spent some time out there. And the reason that Numbers is not an easy book to read sometimes is because it does have two censuses or numberings. And that's where the name of the book comes from. Actually, in the original Hebrew Bible, this book is actually called In the Desert, because that's really a much more appropriate description of what it was that was taking place with the people. That's what this book is about. It tells about all of their desert wanderings. There's also another name for this. It's also called the Book of Murmurings, because guess what the kids of Israel were doing an awful lot of? They were really complaining about things, and that's what we're going to look at this morning. Here's the scenario. The Israelites have been out of Egypt for about a year. That's how long they've been out. And in that year time, they've been traveling somewhat, but during that time, God has been establishing his covenant with them first, teaching them how to have relationship with him. You got to remember, for over 600 years, these folks had been in Egypt. Now, they had been worshiping God, but by and large, they were always being told what they could do, when they could do it, when they could eat, when they couldn't eat. They were a slave nation. So God was having to retrain them in how to understand what it is to love him and to receive his love back from them. It's during this time, that year, that God gives them the Ten Commandments. Okay, goes up on the thing. Gets the Ten Commandments, comes down, boom, smashes them. Why? Because the children of Israel were sinning. And then he goes back up, gets another set, comes down, and then God begins again to tell them about the tabernacle and how they're going to handle the Ark of the Covenant and all of those types of things that they have. But the problem was is that the Israelites were not content with where they were headed. Because here's something to consider. How long did it take the children of Israel to get to Canaan? What was the time period of that? How long? You know, 40 years it took them to get there. You know how long it took them to actually get to Canaan? 1 year. They were actually right near the Jordan after that first year, traveling around, the different things. As a matter of fact, there's some scholars that say it really would have only taken just actually maybe a month or two, even just a few weeks, to actually go from Egypt across to the Jordan to Canaan, which is where God said he was going to take them. That's all the time it would have taken him to get there. But it actually took them 40 years. Why? Well, if you read in the book of Numbers and go to the 11th chapter, is that where you are? It starts off with this. It says, now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. And when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Now that's how the chapter starts out. When you go back just a little bit before that, you see that the children of Israel have come out from that time for about a year, and they're just sort of milling around, but they begin to whine and complain. Boy, the Israelites did that a lot. I know that's nothing that we ever do. But they complained constantly about what was not happening, what they didn't have. Never mind the fact that God was taking care of them. Never mind that these are the same people that watched 10 plagues come into Egypt but stayed away from Goshen, which is where they lived. Never mind that when they left that place, they come to the Red Sea, and Pharaoh's thinking, well, your God's not that good of a military guy, is he? He's got you against the ocean. I'm coming from behind you. You guys are in trouble. God comes, and it says, with the breath of his nostrils, the sea parted. They walked across. And then when the Egyptians began to come across, what happened? God allowed the water to come back over top of them. The Israelites watched all of this. Then they're traveling, and God sends them a white pillar cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night to lead them where he wants them to go. An obvious demonstration of God's presence right there. I would like once in a while to have a pillar of fire in front of me, I think. I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind a white cloud kind of showing me where to go. And if I started to go one way and I shouldn't, the pillar stayed right there. Okay, that's good. I'll go this way. I wouldn't mind that. That would have saved me a lot of heartache, I think, in my life from time to time. These are also the people that God is feeding as they're going through the desert. Bible says their clothes didn't wear out. Because you got to think about that. Where would they have gotten new shoes, new clothes, and all these kinds of things? As long as these people were in the desert, their clothes lasted. They never wore down. God sent them manna every single day for them to eat. Now, manna was like a flake, the Bible says, that they could use and they could make it into cakes and those kinds of things. God's providing this for them every single day, showing them miracle after miracle, water coming from rocks in order to enable them to drink. And yet the Bible says they complained and they murmured. They weren't happy with what it is that God was doing with them. Now, understand, this is a lot of people. Question's been asked many times, how many people actually came out of Egypt? And the best estimate of this, based on the census that you see in Numbers, was it was probably somewhere between 2 and 3 million people were in this group. And that's a lot of people to feed. That's a lot of people to take care of. You can see why Moses got worked up every once in a while, going, how is it I'm supposed to take care of these guys? And you read about that in Numbers 11, because he begins to cry out to God and says, God, how is it that I'm supposed to take care of this massive group of people here that you've given me to lead? And all they do is they whine and complain like little babies. And yet God answered his prayer. I'm still not to the good part yet. Just give me a little bit of background so you know where we're coming from. One of the other things that the children of Israel did often when they complained is they began to reminisce. You ever catch this when you talk about this? They began to reminisce about things. And they would always say, you know what? It was so much better when we were in Egypt. Remember reading that? It was so much better. We had food. We had whatever we wanted. Now, once again, this was a people that were in 600 years of bondage, enslaved, slave labor. Whatever it was that the people wanted to do to them, they could. And yet all they remembered was the things that somehow they got that God wasn't at that moment providing for them. You want to take a minute and do that?